Let's do this. Woo! Ring the bell. This is Between the Ropes.
Oh, you're going for the dirt, for the behind-the-scenes stuff.
It's time to get Between the Ropes. Between the Ropes.
All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to the Between the Ropes podcast. Brian Fritz, Michael Wiseman here. Lots to get to this week in wrestling. Hope everybody subscribes to the podcast. You can get it on iTunes or in Stitcher. You can also get it on SoundCloud as well. Please remember to rate and review the podcast as well. How's everything going this week, Mikey?
Going better than the day before today. Every day is better.
That's what I always say. Look at That's you. My motto. I like it.
If they made a doll of me, like one of those Chucky dolls, you know, if they made one of those of me, it would just have a blank box and the bottom it would say every day is better. People would buy it.
If you say so.
Every day is better. I said it.
Well, I know that you're doing better right now because you probably have a cold beverage with you. So
I've actually got two here, and I gotta decide.
Double fisting tonight.
Well, maybe not. I gotta decide which one of these. You know, this whole being on Wednesdays is throwing off my whole drinking schedule now. I gotta double up on Tuesdays to make up for not having them on Tuesdays, and now we're on Wednesdays. So, you know, I just gotta buy more beer, I guess. Do I go with the cheap beer? Do I go with the nicer beer that's a little bit older? Tell you what, we're gonna pop up here with the old can. We're gonna do something a little simpler this week. That's nice. Drinking a little a Simpler Times brand. This is a lager that you can find exclusively at your local Trader Joe's.
How about that?
It's cheap too. I love me some cheap beer.
It was funny because once you said I'm going with something simpler, I was waiting for like some really cheap beer, like I was waiting for like a Busch Light or Natty Light, something like that.
Well, I do. Well, since you mentioned it, I do have a cup of water here next to me as well. So that's basically the same thing as an Natty Light. There used to be a billboard down 40. I would pass it all the time. And it said, like, in a big natural light, it said, natural light, now with 20% more. You know, they increased the can size from 12 to 16. And I said, wow, that's pretty easy. Whenever I got to do is add some more water to the can, huh?
That's funny.
Hit the music. I don't hit the little symbols, whatever.
Yeah, sure. Well, it's not as funny, if you want to call it funny, as the first thing we've got to get into. And it's the thing that a lot of people that follow wrestling are talking about right now. Uh-huh. This is what is dominating the wrestling landscape.
The food fight from Monday Night Raw. I know. It's all I could think about all week.
Well, the Miz should have known better than to wear a nice white suit. Okay, that's all I'm going to say.
True. It is before Labor Day, but...
By the way... some of the most ridiculous things in that food fight was that Fandango was not food fighting. He was spraying whipped cream on his chest.
Oh, my God.
Did you notice that?
No, I did not.
At one point, he had like a party hat on, and he was not wearing a shirt, and he just leaned back and started spraying whipped cream on his chest.
It worries me how closely you were watching this food fight, because I had my phone in one hand, and I was looking up and said, oh, here goes another food fight, and looked back down and did not pay much attention.
You had that going on, and then you had like Apollo Crews and Cesaro. No, for most of it, no matter how bad it got, they were still entangled in a vicious arm wrestling contest with Rusev sitting right there looking on.
So this is not where we were going. I know, but this is what bothers me about something like this. I am not a fan of these food fights in 2016, especially not to kick off your Monday Night Raw show to celebrate America, because number one, it's incredibly corny. Number two, it feels like something that was ripped straight out of 1995. And number three, it ruins the whole wrestling show, the whole illusion to me, because now I'm supposed to really think these guys were sitting around backstage together having a cookout, and these guys who hate each other, like Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, are just, you know, in the same room, pounding around, no big deal. What?
I know. And the funny thing is that, you know, it's one of those things where I guess you knew that was coming for that show. It's almost like just if you cannot suspend disbelief for what is about to happen. And I mean, not just like on a regular night, but this time it's really going to be emphasized about, you know, guys are going to be hanging around that normally don't hang around. It's one of those where you probably shouldn't watch the show. And if you miss the show, you're not going to miss anything, because on a night like that, where they already know that it's going to be tough to get an audience, they're not really going to advance storylines. There was only one thing out of that was even kind of newsworthy. And everything else, I mean, they did some good stuff, I thought, with John Cena and the club. But outside of that, and the one announcement about Lesnar, there was nothing really notable about the show. So you could have missed it. And I'm not saying like go and skip those shows, but you know what's going to happen on those shows. You know it's going to be like these wild, corny, let's celebrate Independence Day, let's celebrate the holiday kind of shows, and it's not really going to advance storylines, and that's not for everybody. So if there's going to be a show to miss, that's one of them.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and say it. You can go ahead and skip those kinds of shows. I agree with you mostly. I think the show didn't really stand out from one perspective or another, but I will say something. That AJ Styles, John Cena, and the club segment, that was a great segment, and if you did miss this show, go back and watch that promo, because AJ Styles was money. The club was money. And that interaction set up phase two of this feud so well. I am incredibly excited about it. But people used to complain about AJ Styles' mic work, right? That was his one big shortcoming throughout his career. He did a great job out there Monday night. It was entertaining. He played up the heel role really well. Having those guys on his shoulders just really looked fantastic. And I mean, framing him in that way. So again, I think that was a worthwhile segment. And it still, it made John Cena in a vulnerable, put John Cena in a vulnerable position. It made John Cena look weak. And I appreciate that about it too.
I want to know what Carl Anderson's hot Asian wife looks like now.
Like how he slid that one in there.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to go and spend some time with my hot Asian wife. And I'm beating up John Cena.
I just want to know how they're going to find John Cena on all these holidays. Like, are they going to show up at his house on Christmas morning? And if so, how does this work exactly if they're going to beat him up on every major holiday?
Well, it's John Cena. He's a public figure. So probably, you know, just track him on social media and
Foursquare. Yeah. That's the whole thing. Foursquare, right? We all use it.
Exactly.
John Cena, I know I'm totally taking you off game here, and I'm not going to apologize. I apologize for nothing, for no man. I really loved the video he did Monday, July 4th, supporting America. That was floating around.
Yeah, that video was incredible. That 3-minute kind of walk through the streets talking about Independence Day.
Yes,
that was incredible.
Yes, I mean, people love to hate John Cena, but he is come up so far on my list of guys in the last year or two, and that video is part of the reason why. He's doing a lot of things to promote he's always been the all-American guy, right? But he's doing a lot of stuff now that really promotes good causes. And it's almost like, I read an article about this on Polygon this week, and I really believe this, as he's been loosened up a little bit more and allowed to be kind of a pop culture icon, he's become a lot more endearing to a lot of people. And I really think videos like that really show it.
And it shows just how ultra talented the guy is.
Yes.
Because he's incredibly, incredibly talented. And you see that crossover in the other shows he does besides wrestling. Even when he did a couple of movies last year, including Trainwreck, people saw the talent that really shone there. And whatever he wants to do in entertainment going forward, he's going to get that chance. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was funny because, there was some talk about once Michael Strahan, when he left the Daily Show that he does with Kelly Ripa, there was some talk and some belief that maybe John Cena could do that show, because Cena's already done some work on the Today Show, and he kind of fits into that mold of somebody you'd think that would do that. And I don't know how serious it got, if they ever considered him doing it, and I don't think they've announced a replacement for it, but that's something where if Cena really wanted to do it, and he'd make good money doing it, I could easily see him doing that and being on an hour-long Daily Show on a network in that format. And I think he'd be great at it.
I agree. He's coming into his own with a lot of that stuff, too. I think, you know, if you go back 4 or 5 years, I would struggle with that idea a little bit more. But he's increased his abilities in all of those arenas over the last few years. I think he'd be a great fit for something like that. He's so over with just those kind of casual wrestling fans. They know who he is because they see him on the Nick Award. They see him on the Today Show. He promotes a lot of good causes, that he could tap into that audience much like The Rock did very easily. Did you see this video? Was fantastic. You know how the big thing on the internet now is you show something and all of a sudden out of nowhere, here comes John Cena. Right?
Yeah. Yep. Oh, you're talking about the ad for, or the the thing he did for Cricket Wireless. Yes.
Was that not the best video in the world?
For anybody who didn't see it, so John Cena, there's this meme that's out there where people will talk about on the internet like da 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 da, and then they'll play this thing of John Cena, you know, and it's playing the music, and it's got like this big in your face, you know, thing of John Cena kind of picture. So basically, he worked with Cricket Wireless to where they had some different fans or whoever, I think it was actors that actually showed up, but they didn't know that Cena was there, and he was backstage.
And there were some kids there. I mean, there were some younger kids there and whatever, yeah.
Yep, and they were talking about their love for John Cena. What would you do if he was here? And mind you, behind them on the wall was like this poster of Cena. Well, it literally wasn't even on the wall. It was a tearaway. Like, he could break through it, and then later, Cena was breaking through as people were announcing, like, you know, here's John Cena! And at the same time, they played the meme, and then they had two people on trumpet right there starting to play his theme song as Cena broke through the poster and surprised these people. And he did it, I don't know, 5-6 times probably for a bunch of different people.
It was hilarious. Their reactions were just priceless because they weren't expecting John Cena to pop out. And all of a sudden, the trumpet's like a little mariachi band, right? The trumpets play and he pops out and they were so excited. It was a great video to watch.
It was really, really good. Really
and
good.
And don't worry. I know we're praising John Cena right now, who I think does deserve some praise for what he's, especially what he's done in the wrestling ring over the last couple of years. But don't worry, y'all. We are still definitely, I'm going to say, I still definitely have plenty of hate for Roman Reigns, so please hold off on your angry tweets at the Real Wiseman. We can agree that I think Roman Reigns is overrated right now. So
let's get to the biggest story of the week and the thing that so many people are talking about, and that of course is the final deletion from TNA. This epic match that had been built up between Broken Matt Hardy and Jeff Hardy that had been all over social media. We saw some clips of it in advance. It looked wild as hell. Some people get an advanced copy of it and saw the reaction, which went from laughing hysterically to shocked to you name the gamut, and it was there. And I'll tell you what, this segment had anything and everything that you can think about. From you had, you know, a fight in the middle of the woods. You had drones, aerial assault robots, hologram Matt Hardy, tasers, music, xylophones, people doing wrestling moves out of a tree, shooting fireworks at one another, drowning one another. Willow showed up. You had the gardener, Senior Benjamin, and everything else that went involved. It was some of the wildest, craziest, demented, strange, over-the-top wrestling that I have ever seen, and I enjoyed it.
It was great. It was so much better than what we had before, and it was so entertaining. It was great. It's great.
I mean, you can't do it all the time, obviously, and what I'm very curious to see where they go off of this. But
so,
I give so much credit to Matt Hardy because this, I mean, Jeff, you know, obviously played his part, but you know that this is the creation of Matt Hardy. And to see that character, he went from Big Money Matt, and that character is working so well earlier in the year, and he was the champion in TNA, and they took the title off of him probably too soon, and he ditched the character, or at least put it on hold, to go with this Broken Matt Hardy character, which I don't think a lot of people liked at first, but to see where it has gone, what it has become, how over the top it is when it comes to the voices, you know, the way he talks and the different things that have happened. If you're going to do it, go with it, have some fun with it. It is different from anything else. And I applaud him and TNA for finally trying something that's different and saying, you know what, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work, but we are not going to fail for not trying. And they've tried, and I think it's worked.
Yeah. I think so. First off, kudos to Matt Hardy. Matt Hardy is a very talented individual, as you alluded to. He surprises me, I guess. And you can criticize Matt Hardy for certain things over the years, right? Maybe at certain times he didn't give it his all. Maybe he wasn't always in shape as he needed to be. Whatever, whatever. Maybe he went a little over the deep end sometimes when it came to WWE and the way he acted. But you can't take away the guy's creativity. He just has this way of looking at the world that is so unique, and he tries to show that in his art. And I think the Hardy Boys, more than about any other tag team that I can remember, and about almost more than any other wrestler that I can remember, they really treat pro wrestling as art. And I find it weird at times. I think the Willow character has always been one of those kind of oddball things I just don't get. But Matt Hardy has evolved this into something that was very entertaining when it came through to fruition on Tuesday night. Listen, I was right there with you all whenever they released that promo, that contract signing for Slammiversary. I thought it was kind of weird. It was too much. It was out there. And I'll be the first one to say, I've been a major critic of Lucha Underground because of the fact that they use these pre-recorded, heavily produced segments that clash with what you see in the ring. But that's kind of why I really loved what happened Tuesday night, because you're right, it was over the top. There were fireworks. It was just kind of weird at times. There was a hologram and drones flying. But what made it great was that the whole thing was produced. You had this weird produced promo leading up to it, the storyline, much like you would see in Lucha Underground. In fact, if you saw the balloons in the background of Maxwell's birthday party, they looked a little bit like you-know-who from Lucha Underground. But it led into a produced wrestling match where you got these great camera angles and something that was very dramatic. It's not what we see in wrestling, right? We see a couple of cameras set up that just goes back and forth like a live sporting event. But this was a heavily produced Hollywood-esque wrestling match that culminated with a giant fiery thing. It was great, and I really dug that aspect of it because it kept me in the moment. It kept me engaged. Much like, I mean, listen, we're watching Friday Night Lights right now, and I know that those are not real football teams on the field when I'm watching the show, but you can still get into the football game as part of the show because of the way it's produced, and that's what this felt like. And I really, hats off to those two guys. I think they both could use a few more acting classes, especially Jeff. and Matt tends to fall out of his accent a little bit too much sometimes, but they went for it. It was entertaining, and TNA was smart to book the show around this angle and around this match.
Let's talk about the whole segment, the final deletion. They have it online, and you can find the director's cut online. I don't know if TNA has it on their YouTube page, but it is on there, the director's cut. And there's going to be a director's cut with deleted scenes coming as well, I think. Basically, here's the setup. So there is a birthday party for Maxwell. He's turning one, and it's Matt and Maxwell and Rebby Sky. And as they're in like their shed or whatever you want to call it, they had the ring before where him and Jeff had another encounter previously.
And the table didn't quite break right.
Right. So they're getting ready to celebrate Maxwell's first birthday. And Senior Benjamin, Matt Hardy's gardener, I can't even make this up. It's so fancy. I love Senior Benjamin. Senior Benjamin is the best. So he came there and he brought a gift for Maxwell. And I don't know why I found this so funny. Sometimes it's like the weirdest, driest lines that I find hilarious. And just the way that he said it and everything, he hands the present to Matt. And Matt turns to Senior Benjamin and says, "The garden looks magnificent."
And then Matt said, well, they opened up the gift and it was a xylophone. And then what he said, this is a fantastic xylophone.
This is a fantastic gift, you know.
Yes.
And then before
xylophone. He said xylophone. That's what killed me.
Before Senior Benjamin walked off, Matt gave him the instructions, prepare the battlefield for massacre.
Oh.
Massacre. And mind you, there's dramatic music going on behind all this. I just got to explain it. So he leaves, and Rebby asks Matt, what are you going to do for Maxwell's first birthday? And he says, I'm going to restore the Hardy name, and I am going to delete Brother Nero. So it sets up this fight. So next thing you know, Jeff Hardy is at his house, and Jeff's got this elaborate way he's cut his yard and like all these symbols and whatnot. And so he's done mowing the lawn, and he goes inside, and he's about to play guitar when he notices a drone there, okay? So he goes around to the front door because somehow this drone has rung the doorbell, and he goes there. It's a camera, and you can hear Matt Hardy's voice going, Brother Nero! And the next thing you know, aerial assault robots are attacking Jeff Hardy. Like, like Matt is talking, like this drone with Matt is talking to Jeff at the front, and somehow Jeff is like left open the slider in the back, and these aerial assault robots like fly in, and so he's smashing them away with his guitar.
Not damaging his guitar at all. I thought that was right. The best thing.
And by the way, that is quite the bright shade of blue that Matt, that Jeff Hardy has chose to paint the walls of his house.
I know, okay. Right?
And then, so after he swats these away, Matt is inside on the drone talking to him, and a hologram appears of Matt Hardy. And he's telling Jeff, he's challenging him to this match. If you watch the extended, like the director's cut or whatever, Jeff then gets on his bike and he chases after the drone. Mm-hmm. And even while he's on the drone, he's swatting away aerial assault robots.
Yes.
But great. And then while this is going on, so he's gone away on the bike, right? The real Matt Hardy is at Jeff's house and gets on the riding lawnmower and decides to ruin the elaborate lawn the way that Jeff has cut it. And he puts his arms extended out as he's riding this riding lawnmower, and he's like, so he's ruining the lawn, right? Uh-huh. So then cut to...
Because that's the worst you can... And listen, if you're going to do something,
yes,
mess up somebody's lawn, because right. Then...
Then now it's night, and we're out in the woods, and there's a referee that's driving to this ring that's out in the middle of nowhere. And he goes, oh my God, what in the hell? And he gets in the ring, and there's Matt. And Matt basically says, you have one job tonight, to count the pinfall or to count the submission of Brother Nero. You know, so, and then Jeff shows up and it's time to fight. So they're fighting. And mind you, by the way, before this too, Senior Benjamin is putting a bunch of different weapons under the ring. And at one point he's like digging in the dirt. And Rebby is like, what are you doing? And he goes, well, Matt told me to prepare the battlefield for massacre. And Matt at one point gives him a canister of gasoline and tells him to make sure that you use this, which comes into play later.
Yep.
So fast forward, Matt and Jeff are having the match and they're swatting each other. They're beating each other. The ladder gets introduced. At one point, Matt is choking Jeff with it. They trade near falls. Jeff at one point sets up this ladder in the corner and puts Matt on it, and then gets out of the ring and climbs up a freaking tree. There's a big ladder against a tree, and Jeff goes way up in this tree and goes for a senton and misses, but hits the ladder in the ring.
Ugh.
But yet he's the one that still somehow is able to go for another pin, but Matt kicks out.
And he hit it. It seemed like in an awkward way. I don't know what happened. I don't know if they didn't want to do it again or what it was, but the way he hit that, it looked like a bad bump.
By the way, and the whole ring looked like it was a stiff ring.
Yeah.
I mean,
it did.
So as the fight goes on, Matt gets out of the ring and he grabs a canister of fireworks and he lights it, because there's tiki torches around the ring. He lights it and he starts shooting them from outside the ring, from one corner, across the ring to the other corner where Jeff is. And Jeff is fending off these fireworks with the lid of a garbage can. And he's like, what the hell is wrong with you? He's screaming, right?
Yeah.
So this goes on, and then there's like silence, and Matt is going, Brother Nero, and there's, you know, smoke, and you name it. And he's got like a garden rake or something, and he's talking about how he's ready to end him. And next thing you know, he totally breaks character and goes with normal voice and goes, oh bleep. And Jeff is still alive and he's got fireworks of his own.
Yeah.
And Jeff is like, oh bleep indeed. And Matt starts running for the hills and Jeff starts shooting off the fireworks at him. And as he's running, Matt makes his way to like some body of water. It's like a lake or a pond there. And
like a horror movie. I mean, this was like the horror movie segment of the show. Yeah.
And there's a boat there. You know, just like this little small metal boat. And Matt says something about, but basically he covers himself over the boat. So Jeff's fireworks run out as he's just pelting this boat, right? The backside of it. And then finally, he tips it over. Him and Matt start fighting again. And now they're fighting in the water. And it looks like Matt has drowned Jeff. And when Matt is just looking for him again, who appears? Willow. That's right. Willow appears. I don't know how. But yeah. Willow is there. He's dry as a bone, too. And he's speaking in that weird language that he has or whatever. And it looks like he's about to kill Matt when Senior Benjamin makes the save and tasers Willow.
You cannot make this up.
And then Willow is laying there, and Matt's like going to unmask him, and he unmasks him. And guess what? Somehow it's Senior Benjamin.
Senior Benjamin.
It's like, what the hell is
that? That was weird.
And then Jeff reappears, and they're fighting some more, and they end up making their way over to like this dirt pit, right? And Jeff starts choking him, and it looks like he has choked him out. And Matt is just laying there prone in this dirt pit. And Jeff's like symbol that he has like this big wooden, I guess it was wooden structure of it right there at the head of it. So Jeff has got a ladder up against that. So Jeff is going to climb all the way up this symbol, and he's going to do a senton. He's going to finish his brother finally, right? Mm-hmm. And just when he's about to, Matt starts having like these flashbacks of, I can't remember exactly what. There's like these weird montage flashbacks, and it goes back to like his son's first birthday. And Rebbe shows up with this candle that they had lit that was on the birthday cake and hands it to Matt. And Matt lights the dirt, and that's where the gasoline was poured, and it goes all the way up the symbol. So this big, you know, shoot of fire goes up this, up the symbol. And it goes right up to Jeff. Mind you, Matt is laying in this. And if you look at it closely, it looks like Matt's going to be on fire. I mean, he's got like a blue flame under him and everything. But
it was dangerous.
It was scary. So like this big path of fire goes all the way from the dirt up the symbol. And Jeff ends up falling off there. And it's supposed to be like he gets burned, right? So he falls off there. He takes this bump off of that into this dirt hill. And then Matt covers him for the pin. Oh, by the way, before, when there was a Willow, he actually covered Willow. But when they unmasked it and they found it was Senior Benjamin, the referee had to tell you that it did not count.
Yeah.
But in the end, Broken Matt Hardy defeated Jeff, Brother Nero. And today, he has not only been bragging about it, but he has taken over Jeff's social media and just doing this hysterical laugh and saying, delete, delete, delete. It's just the craziest, wildest thing. I mean, I don't know if you always want something that's supposed to be, I guess you can laugh at it. And you don't always want stuff that's funny, that's also supposed to be kind of a serious angle, but they knew that they were laughing at themselves. It's a very unique thing. And the whole character that they've done with Matt has been very different, very strange, but very unique. Mm-hmm. They did the build-up to the previous match. They've done this match. I don't know where they go with this. I don't know how much farther they can go with this.
Yeah.
But for what it is, it's so different and so campy that you got to have some fun with it. And I think for anybody that takes it too serious and says, you know, this is what wrestling is about. I mean, that's fine. You're entitled to your own opinion, but they're just trying something that's way out of the box. And I think a lot of people are having fun with it, and it's garnered them a lot of attention.
It's the same people that are criticizing this or that were criticizing this are some of the same people that love Lucha Underground. And to me, the stuff that takes place in Lucha Underground might be a little bit better stage, be a little bit more professional. You have the extra level of shine on top of it, but it's still the same concept and it's still kind of campy.
Yeah.
You know, you have characters and you have this soap opera storyline. So I'm glad to see Matt Hardy take something like this and make it very personal. And I can't believe I'm going to say this. I'm glad they doubled down on it because I was, again, 2-3 weeks ago before Slammiversary, they're trying something new, good for them, but whatever, it doesn't work. This worked. It was entertaining. There were some stakes built into it, and I don't want to see it for everything, but it paid dividends, I think, last night. It paid dividends for TNA, paid dividends for Matt Hardy, and I think it paid dividends for wrestling because we got to see something new.
Yeah, and it was funny because there was a lot of talk that a lot of guys in WWE had seen the segment previously, and they were laughing and they were having fun about it. You've seen some different reactions from TNA wrestlers. Yeah, there's a minute long video of EC3 watching it.
Yeah.
And he's laughing his ass off as he's watching it. And you can tell he's having a good time. Between that and going, oh my God, Jeff, what are you doing? When it comes to him, like doing that dive out of the tree under the ladder and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's something that a lot of people enjoyed. Like I said, you can't do it all the time. I have no idea how they're going to follow up on this.
Sure.
But for something that's very unique and you're doing it on a limited basis, hey, I applaud them, you know. And it's funny because Matt has been very creative and people have given him a lot of credit for continuing to kind of recreate himself. Even the Young Bucks pointed us out on Twitter talking about how Matt just keeps finding a way to evolve when it comes to his character and being in wrestling. Matt is extremely creative, and he's a guy that wants to be on a creative team. And, you know, TNA should put him on there probably. Like he's obviously doing a lot of these segments, but I wonder if they should put him on there on a full-time basis, if that's something you want to do. And even if it's not with TNA, and if it's a few years down the road, whether it's Matt's own promotion or what other promotions are out there, including WWE, I think you should take a serious look at hiring Matt Hardy for creative.
I agree. Imagine we take this and we make fun of it because it's a little bit amateurish, and maybe because the Hardy Boys, like I said, could use a little bit better acting in these videos. But imagine this mind paired with somebody who had a little bit of money, who could make this look more professional. It wasn't quite as amateurish. You have some big names in there. This could be a very fun kind of thing to do with wrestling promotions. And Matt Hardy, you're right. His mind is of that creative side. He might not be the greatest of all time in the ring, although the Hardy Boys are one of the greatest tag teams of all time. Let's not kid ourselves. He would be a great asset to many creative teams, various promotions, wherever. I think TNA is the big winner here. And I think they were very smart last night because they knew there was going to be added attention on their show on Pop TV to frame this as kind of the headlining event, but then tie in some other things. They had this great angle with the X Division last night, that the X Division Championship being on the line. Will he or won't he cash in after it changed hands? That was a great way to capture that audience that was there last night and tease them for next week. Because now, as a guy who watches TNA off and on, I want to watch next week so I can see Destination X, so I can see this big title match, this title versus title match.
Yeah, Bobby Lashley and Eddie Edwards, who won the X Division Championship.
So I think this was a great way to capitalize on the momentum and all the attention that the Hardy Boy storyline was getting and bring fans back in for next week, which was genius. Now, that being said, I am over Dixie Carter as much as I've ever been, and I am way beyond over Billy Corgan. I think he needs to get all, as they said back in the early 2000s, get the F out.
Well, neither of them are very good characters, and there's been too much of them on TV, especially Dixie.
Yeah.
And this is an opportunity to take themselves off TV. They should be, because they've had some other good stuff on there. Like you said, when the segment they did with Lashley and Eddie Edwards was really good, and setting up that match, you know, for next week, I thought was very good. You know, going back to, you know, the whole production level of the Final Deletion, is it top-notch production quality? No, but I think it's even better that it's done that way. Mm-hmm. Just because they're using drones and they're using GoPros and they've got this music in the background. Just kind of I think the only thing that I would say that needs to be cleaned up a little bit on those is there is like these kind of weird zoom in sometimes with the camera where they're like zoom in and they stop and then they kind of move the camera and they move again all on the same shot. Maybe that a little bit, but that's really nitpicking, and it's not really something that bothered me. I mean, it's supposed to be raw. I mean, that goes to the whole thing when people criticize Matt over the accent. He's supposed to be like this deranged, crazy person that's having this out of body experience, I guess. So is he supposed to really have like this regular accent where he's kind of all over the place with it? And he, you know, sometimes he's in it and sometimes he's out of it and whatnot. Of course not. It's supposed to be, you know, weird because he doesn't even know what he's doing. You know, that's part of what the character is. The guy's broken. That's why he's broken Matt Hardy.
Yeah, I think I get why you give it a pass, but I still think it reflects poorly. I really... The camera and editing and everything, it comes across as amateurish. And I think that's that's where I struggle, is it becomes too amateurish. And while it's Raw, you can do Raw without being amateurish. But anyway, nitpicking aside, I get – you're right. It's not as bad as people make it out to be, but it still could be better. And with the right talent – with an angle like this, you could do some pretty fantastic things, similar to what Lucha Underground has been trying to do, but up at another notch. I love the fact that this wrestling match was done in this TV Hollywood style. That's what I think I'm most excited about from this.
Yeah, you know, it was just something that was so different and so wild. I watched it on TNA on the program, and then I watched it again today because I watched like the director's cut. Mm-hmm. And I mean, normally I don't laugh at wrestling, and I look at wrestling as something I don't want to laugh at a lot. I mean, obviously, you don't mind a little bit of comedy here and there, guys working in lines or whatever, but sure. This had me, like, laughing in different spots and just kind of, like, just nitpicking and looking at everything going, what the hell am I experiencing right now? It's so visceral and so weird and so different, and like I said, I give them credit for trying, you know, doing something that's, that is just so different from anything else that we've seen. And I don't want to like, oh, but how did this happen to this happen to this happen? You don't try to explain it. It's something that you just want to experience and, you know, take it from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just let art flow over you. You got to let art flow over you sometimes.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if you saw, but there was a little back and forth between, people at Lucha Underground in TNA last night. So,
really?
Yes. So Eric Van Wagenen, who's the executive producer, one of the co-creators of El Rey, went on Twitter after this and said, execution is everything. Sorry, guys. Nice try. This is Impact Wrestling creative about right now. And it's a shot of Boogie Nights where guy is in the car after he tried to kiss the main character, and main character said, hey, I'm not like that. And he's going, I'm a bleeping idiot, over and over. And that's what they have as a GIF for it. Well, Jeremy Borash decided to respond. And he said, best of luck to you and everybody at LU. I hope to check it out when my cable system gets El Rey Network. Here it's great. Now, since then, Eric Van Wagenen did respond, and he's kind of apologized. He said, can't we all just get along? Apologies to all affected by my very dickish tweet. I do respect TNA for thriving in a very tough business.
Yes, it feels a little bit like soured grapes, I guess, coming from Lucha Underground. We get it. We know you guys are unique, and you've been doing your own little cool thing over there with all the Lucha stuff and the Spanish soap opera. But for real, TNA did something out of the norm and got a lot of attention for it. And we should all be thankful as wrestling fans, because again, the more companies like TNA, like Ring of Honor, even like Lucha Underground can find success in this business, the better off the entire business is going to be. And definitely Lucha and TNA and Ring of Honor don't need to be fighting it out and bickering amongst themselves, because that's not going to help anybody.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk a little WWE. Let's talk about Raw. The 4th of July edition. We talked about the food fight already.
And there you go. So we're talking about this, that Hardy versus Hardy final deletion. And you could compare it to the food fight that the wrestling promotion in the world, the biggest in the world, is showing to open up their show. It just, there's no comparison there. You're right. It was rough. I mean, I'm right. I'm right here, right? It was rough, but that food fight was just terrible.
Yeah, it was nothing spectacular, to say the least. But you know what? They do these all the time on these type of shows. And we probably should have known that they were going to do a food fight or something. And by the way, my man Tyler Breeze is the guy that started the whole thing by spraying chocolate syrup all over The Miz, as I'm looking at it again right now.
You're rewatching the food fight.
I'm watching the beginning of it, and Fandango was the one that threw the stuff on Maurice.
Do you have nothing better to do than rewatch that terrible
food? No, I just watched the 30-second clip. I mean, WWE literally has a clip of who started the world's largest food fight, and they spotlight.
Get it on DVR, right? You're going to revisit it for years to come.
No, I don't think so. But now, so as corny as it was, the corniest part was at the end where Kevin Owens has does not have a speck of food on him. He somehow survived this whole thing because he hid under a table. But then at the end, somebody, and I don't know how, but they did this in like a POV shot. Maybe it was the cameraman. But out of nowhere, Kevin Owens got hit in the face with a cream pie was ticked off. Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, it's one of those things too where, again, I'll say, hey, don't get too mad about it. You could skip the show. It doesn't really mean anything. Should they do it? Probably not, but it's one of those campy, hey, this is going to be the holiday edition, you know, and we're having some fun tonight shows. And they do things like that, just like they did in the end. They did this 16-man elimination tag, and it was Team America against Team... Oh, it was the Multinational Alliance, okay, against Team USA. And in the end, it was the Big Show and Zack Ryder that survived Team USA and won the match. Zack Ryder actually got the winning pinfall.
Team Woo USA.
Gee, I guess so, man. And like at one point, Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn are trying, I guess, are supposedly getting along, even though they're in the middle of this heated feud and they're going to have a match at Battleground to try to finally end the rivalry. And yet they walk down to the ring, not together, but not too far apart. And they're on the same team. But then in the middle of the match, they start fighting. And Kevin Owens actually, I believe, hit a teammate with a chair, but he got disqualified somehow.
Yeah.
And then Kane used a chair and he got disqualified. By the way, I had no idea that Kane was American.
He's from the pits of hell. Does that count?
I thought he was like Lithuanian or something like that, you know. But
you mean Kane the character, Kane the actor, Glenn Jacobs,
all of them? I don't know, man.
Dr. Yankum?
Sure, why not? I had no idea that he was considered American, but they did that match, and I mean, the a lot of the show was really nothing. Quite honestly, I mean they did. Titus O'Neil against Rusev, and Titus was dressed like Apollo Creed from Rocky IV.
Yep.
And the only difference was that he lived for another day, unlike Apollo Creed. But Titus did lose the match.
Spoiler alert.
I was waiting for Duke to come out and spout the line like he did in the middle of the fight between Ivan Drago and Apollo, when Drago kept hitting him after the bell, and he goes, "This is supposed to be an exhibition."
But the problem is, they've already done the Rocky storyline a couple years ago with Jack Swagger. And to that point, Michael Cole was wrong. He said that Rusev went undefeated his first year as the U.S. champion. Rusev did not go undefeated. In fact, we saw him suffer his first loss on Monday Night Raw. Oh, no, it was... Was it? No. It was the taping. Was it SmackDown? Anyway, he suffered his first loss at the hands of Jack Swagger in a countout.
Right.
And that still counts as a loss, people. Wins and losses still matter.
You know it. But the thing that I most take away from this, that I hope, is the feud between Rusev and Titus is over.
Yeah.
This needs to be over. It's never clicked. I don't know who they put with Rusev next, but they've got to go in a different direction. If Titus was ever going to win the United States Championship, it was going to be on Monday.
Right.
And he did not win it.
Out. Yep. He was ready. He was the American soldier.
You know it. So, but if he had come out to Living in America, like James Brown style, man, that would have been the cherry on the top. But I mean, the only things that really came out of this, like we said, was the segment we talked about with Cena and the club. Where the club kept talking about they're going to beat up John Cena over and over and over. Yep. And finally they went down there and they beat up John Cena. And guess what? John Cena actually has friends, apparently, because he got saved by Enzo and Big Cass, who, by the way, earlier on the show, defeated the Social Outcasts, who were dressed up as Minutemen. So they went from being like in a comedy match to like an hour later, they were involved in one of the two biggest storylines in the company.
Yeah. It's crazy.
It was. And by the way, they were also on... What was the commercial? Was it like Sonic or something like that?
I don't watch commercials.
They were like on a commercial too. No. And it's like, oh, geez.
I find out about my fast food information from podcasts because I just don't watch commercials anymore. Today, Cheetos. They got this Cheetos mac and cheese. Have you seen this thing? Burger King literally Have you seen this?
I've seen it, yeah.
Yeah, they deep fry a Cheeto or something, and they stuff mac and cheese inside of it. It's delicious. I didn't know about it because I don't watch commercials. But then I heard about it on another podcast that it is, in fact, nationwide.
Wait. You're listening to other podcasts?
Yeah, well, you know, I play this a couple of times a week, and I get bored of hearing myself talk. So.
Mm.
Oh, no, wait. I'm sorry. I get bored of hearing you talk.
Now, wait a second. So you've had this Cheeto?
Mm-hmm. I got one today on the way home.
Saying you liked it, huh?
I was listening to the Giant Bomb cast. So that's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
I talk about them all. We met them, right?
We met them.
We met Vinny and Alex. And they were talking about it, and I was like, well, I wonder if it's at my Burger King. And I stopped at my Burger King and got one, and it was pretty fantastic. The wife digs it too, so.
Yeah, I knew that you'd like stuff like that.
Can we get like a little sponsorship going with Burger King? You reckon they'd partner up with us? We can promote those.
We could try it.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Well, the only other thing that was newsworthy that came off that show was they announced that on SmackDown Thursday night, they will reveal who Brock Lesnar will be facing at SummerSlam.
Mark Hunt.
No, that's at UFC 200 on Saturday night. And that's what makes this whole thing interesting is that, so they're going to announce who Brock is facing at SummerSlam, which is in late August, before his fight at UFC against Mark Hunt. Because you would think they would wait, because depending on whether or not he wins or loses, then they can go whatever route that they want. You'd think it might be a different route when it comes to who he would face at SummerSlam. But instead, they're going to reveal it in advance. Now, mind you, they could say he's going to face the WWE champion, or he's going to face, you know, they could put it in the realm of he's going to face a champion or something like that. But I don't know if they're going to, or they're going to name a particular person, but it's very intriguing that they would do this, considering that he's got this big fight coming on Saturday night, and you don't know if he is going to be knocked out, if he's going to lose, or if he's going to be the one doing, you know, the knocking out, and if he is going to be winning the fight. So it's just a curious decision, I think.
I agree. It's weird, too, because SmackDown is not a thing right now. If you waited until, let's say, July 19th, or maybe July 26th, right? You tune in the 19th to see the draft. You tune back in the next week to find out who Brock Lesnar's opponent is. That might make sense. But for them to come out this early on July 7th and say they're going to announce it, especially because the rumor that I've heard, and there's no merit to this, but that it's going to be Randy Orton. And while that is a feud that we've never seen, it just seems like a weird place to put Brock Lesnar in a very... I don't know. It almost feels too safe, you know? Like, they're just trying to do something with him they haven't done before, no matter if he wins or loses.
Well, that's the whole thing, because he can go out there and be Randy Orton, but how big of a match is that? And it's nothing against Orton. It just feels like it's a match.
Yes.
You know, kind of like when he faced Dean Ambrose, you know, WrestleMania this year. It just felt like it was a match.
And they built it up. Don't get me wrong. They built up that Dean Ambrose match to be something special, but yeah, you're right. Just, it's another match.
It feels like Brock... He's not in the world title picture, and it's like, now that he's ended this feud with Undertaker, what else is there that really feels big for him? Yeah. And that's why I kind of wonder if, when it comes to this match at SummerSlam, could they go the route, could they announce that he's going to face Roman Reigns?
Hmm.
And that would tell you a lot about what WWE thinks of Roman.
Yeah.
Because if they put him in that match and say Brock wins it, now, I don't know if they would do that match and who would win. I mean, I could still see Roman winning it. But if it was Brock, I think it would tell you that WWE has, you know, lost some faith in Roman. But who knows if they're even going to do that match? It's just me speculating. Like you said, there's been a rumor going around that he would face Randy Orton. But maybe they'll just say he's going to face the WWE champion. And they don't care if he wins or loses that fight, because they still believe he is going to be a big draw. We can control different elements. He can come back here. Heyman can cut a wild promo to cover everything up. He can go on a rampage and destroy everything, and then he'll be right there at the top of the card, and the credibility will be there for him.
But doesn't that kind of show your hand before the draft? I mean, at that point, he's going to be on the... I mean, can you just say that he gets a shot at whichever world title of the brand he's on? I don't know.
Well, they haven't even announced that they're going to do a second championship yet.
Well, that's true. Then it's weird, then. So you're cutting the Shield feud off at 1 month? Whenever Roman Reigns was even around for most of it. It doesn't make sense to do it this way. And it seems like a cheap way to get a spike in ratings, you know?
Yeah. So let's talk about that fight. So he's got Mark Hunt, a seasoned pro who's 42 years old. He's going to be facing him Saturday night in the co-main event of UFC 200. Brock has not fought since 2011, and he's coming back to face a very dangerous puncher. And Brock is even saying, like, originally I didn't think I was going to fight till later this year when the UFC debuts in New York City at Madison Square Garden. And the fight kind of came together very quickly, so he's only having about 5 weeks to train for a guy that's, you look at his record, it might not be anything special, but anybody that knows fighting knows that Mark Hunt is tough as nails. He is a very heavy puncher, and he can knock anybody out.
It's going to be a challenge, and if Brock Lesnar can pull off, I think at this point, this would be an upset if Brock Lesnar wins, not because he's not talented, but because the diverticulitis, because he was out of the fight game for so long, because he's been doing something entirely different that's still rough on his body. Now, it's worth saying they put on the gloves, and they weren't quite big enough yet. He still has the biggest hands in UFC, Brock Lesnar does, but this is going to be a challenging fight, and I think this is going to be a tricky opponent just because of the nature. He kind of, Mark Hunt plays into some of Brock Lesnar's weaknesses. So it's going to be weird if Brock Lesnar wins, because then it almost feels like Brock Lesnar is in the title hunt, just like everybody else in the heavyweight division these days, you know?
Did you see the there's a backstage video where he's trying on gloves?
Yes.
It was like five times, and they said they still don't fit, and they go, well, this is the biggest ones we have.
Yeah, that's what I was referencing, is that his hands are just so massive, right? Bigger than anybody else's in UFC history, apparently.
It's crazy, man. I mean, who knows? I mean, but...
So it's also curious, too, because you heard about Stephanie McMahon kind of poo-pooing away on this whole thing.
She did an interview with Business Insider about a week ago, and she had said, you know, we're not promoting it. Basically, she said, we're not promoting it. We're allowing him to do this thing this one time or whatever. And then last week, there was a conference call with the media, with some of the top fighters from UFC 200. And Brock was like, I don't give a bleep what she says.
Right.
And he was like, I don't give a bleep if this hurts my wrestling credibility or whatever. You know, he's like, I'm doing this for myself. I want to fight. He goes, I've always wanted to fight. I've wanted to compete. I was sick before. This has been sitting with me. I'm healthy now. And you know what? I'm not doing this for anybody else except for myself. I want to fight.
Yeah. Yep.
And kudos to him, because
she says we're allowing him to do this fight. You're not allowing Brock Lesnar to do anything. He's going to do anything he damn well pleases. He's Brock Lesnar.
Well, I know, because somebody asked him about that, and he said, well, he goes, I think Vince and I have both matured a lot since I had my problems with the company and him years ago. And I think he knows, too, that a happy Brock Lesnar is a lot easier to deal with.
Yes, exactly.
I would totally agree with on that. Mm. So who do you got on Saturday night? Do you like Mark Hunt or do you like Brock?
If I were a betting man, I would probably put money on Mark Hunt. There's a part of me that says this is Brock effing Lesnar. There is no I guess I got to go with Mark Hunt. I trust him a little bit more. He's just been there more consistently.
It's going to be extremely hard for a guy that took 5 years off and now is basically doing a 5 week camp to face a guy that, yes, he is older, but like I said before, is tough as nails. And, Mark Hunt's a good boxer, and we know that that's he's a good striker, and we know that that is, I can't say boxer, but he's a good striker, but then that's Brock's, weakness. But the whole game is going to be, can Brock get him down on the mat? If he can get him down on the mat and control him and hit him with shots, Brock can win that fight. If it stays standing and Mark Hunt's really good at takedown defense, then Mark's going to win that fight. Yep. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah,
and we'll see who controls the fight. You know, it's gonna be interesting, man. I'm really looking forward to watching that show come Saturday. Are you gonna watch it?
Yeah, man. That is a great card. I don't know if it quite reaches UFC 100 heights, but they have positioned it in a way that they're trying. Even the undercard is fantastic. I was looking at the talent on that undercard, and it's just there are names all over the place on it.
So as wacky and weird and fantastic as it was to watch the final deletion, the Wyatt family was on ESPN SportsCenter for the normal Tuesday night slot. They do this off the top rope segment. It's typically done with Jonathan Coachman, but this week it was Todd Grisham, who also works at ESPN.
And who used to work with WWE.
Right. I got to tell you, man, this was very strange and surreal. So I already thought it was kind of weird that they said that Bray Wyatt was going to be, you know, doing this segment. And they literally did it like in this smoky back room, like where you'd see the Wyatts cut a promo. And there's Bray standing front and center, no hat on, but he's in whatever, you know, his wrestling gear is. And behind him is Eric Rowan and Braun Strowman, and both of them have their masks on to begin this interview. Now, mind you, Grisham is only talking to Bray Wyatt, and Bray is, I guess, in character, out of character kind of way that he does, mm-hmm. you know, media interviews. And like about halfway through it, Strowman and Rowan take their masks off, but they stand there with crazed looks in their faces and they never crack a smile. And it was just one of the weirdest, oddest things I've ever seen, because they're doing this crossover segment with ESPN Sports Center. And these guys are so far in character when everybody else we've seen is not in character. Right. And then these guys are sitting there with a strange, weird look on their face. I'm sure there's some people that are not wrestling fans that had SportsCenter on. Now, mind you, it's not at a weird time. It's not at 9 o'clock. So it's not like the main SportsCenter that's on like at 6 or 11 or midnight, but it's still a version of SportsCenter. And they tune in there and they're like, okay, here comes wrestling. And then, oh my God, what the hell is this that's on here? These over the top characters. It's really. It was really strange and funny. I got a good laugh out of it.
I mean, if you watch Stephen A. Smith and Skip Bayless, you're used to over-the-top characters already, so I don't know.
Tell them about it. They got some of the greatest heels ever on that show, right?
Dear Lord. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, man. So a couple other news and notes. Uh-huh. You know, Bret Hart can be very outspoken, right?
No, not Bret Hart. Not Bret the Hitman Hart.
Bret the Hitman Hart. Did you hear Bret Hart, what he said on his podcast?
I have not listened to his podcast this week.
So he's got his podcast and it got brought up. His sons Blade and Dallas were on there and they were talking about the 2K video games.
Okay, cool names. By the way, I'm gonna name my kids Razor and Blade.
Okay.
So, even if they're women, even if they're females.
You're like Rocky, where he named his turtles Cuff and Link?
Yes, exactly.
So somehow he got the question about what do you think of the 2K video games? And this is what he said. I like the new one. I have some discrepancies with the game a little bit. I went to a thing last fall when the latest 2K game was coming out. They were telling me how I'm an 85 or something in that, like that. And Triple H is a 98. Okay. Now you can see where this is going already. Okay. Oh, he goes, I remember I was like, why would he be a 98? And they go, well, because he's the boss and we have to suck up to the boss. I don't know. He was laughing about it. It kind of pissed me off. I thought, I don't care how many titles Triple H wins. He could never lace my bleeping boots up, period.
Jesus.
And one of his sons was like, whoa, shots fired. And Bret said, he was a very good, mediocre wrestler. He never blew me away with anything that he's ever done. He's never come up with much. He's always been a very decent wrestler that could give you a good match as far as being, like, mind-blowing, period, you know, dot, dot, dot. And one of his sons said, the best there is, the best there was, the best there ever will be. And Bret said, I never saw it. I've still never seen it. I've seen him in some matches, and the whole 4 out of 10 thing came out of his match with Lesnar, which should have been such a good match. It was a mediocre match, if that. That's where 4 out of 10 comes from. He's always a guy that would give you a 5 out of 10 match every night.
Wow.
And he went on to say some other things, but apparently the Hitman, not a fan of the game.
Wow. He's not a fan of the game, Triple H. He's not a fan of the game in any sense about playing the game.
Right. Yeah, that too, yeah.
Can't say I'm surprised because Bret is so outspoken. Okay, Triple H is probably not Triple H is not the greatest in-ring technician of all time. Without a doubt, he's not. There's no way he is. He's not one of the best, right? He can put on entertaining matches, but Triple H was a good mix of a lot of things, but he was never, I felt like, the best or the man. You know, he always had somebody that kind of overshadowed him in different parts of his career. But I don't think he's as bad as Bret Hart is making him out to be. And I think what sets Triple H apart is maybe not his in-ring prowess, but his ability to, no pun intended, actually play the game. Triple H has a great mind for the business. We can say matches weren't the most entertaining. He was not the most entertaining wrestler, but he has a mind for the business, unlike some of the people that have come before him. And also unlike Bret Hart, who has just kind of turned his back on the business. That's not a slam at him, but you know what I mean.
Right. And the thing is, too, you know, when it comes to Triple H, I think that he is underrated when it comes to his work in the ring. A lot of times, I'm not saying he was the greatest, but I think he's very good.
And that Brock Lesnar match you're talking about, he had good matches with Brock Lesnar.
Yes, he absolutely did. I know that Bret looks at things a little bit different than most people, and he gauges things on his own level, and which is totally his right to do. I'm just kind of surprised at how open he is about this. And yes, he's had some work with WWE, and this isn't going to tarnish anything that they may or may not do with him in the future. But even if you feel this way, I don't know the reason why to express it kind of in this manner. But the guy's being honest. He's being forthright. You know, it's not like he's hiding his opinion. So I give him credit for that. But I think this is him overdoing it a little bit. I think there's some more to the story, possibly, when it comes to his relationship with Triple H.
It seems that way. And that does not seem like the best avenue to air it and kind of create this. You got to pick your spots, Bret. Sorry, dude.
Maybe if he saw Triple H on a hologram off a drone, maybe that would change his mind.
You never know. I guess maybe if there were drones attacking his front yard and his porch and everything, this could. Senior Benjamin was there. This could all be a whole different story.
You know, you can go to Pro Wrestling Tees and you can buy a Senior Benjamin landscaping t-shirt.
Better question, will he come and actually do my landscaping? That's what I need.
I don't know. If you fly him in, I'll bet he will. Oh, wait, is he getting any proceeds from the t-shirt sales?
Pro Wrestling Tees? Maybe.
Maybe. Benjamin. Couple last things. So it looks like Moose is going to TNA.
Okay.
Moose from Ring of Honor.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not official yet, but it sure looks like it's happening. I mean, he's even said that, yes, I've talked to TNA. There was conflicting reports over today of whether or not he signed a contract, but it looks like he is going there. And he might even appear or debut on Tuesday when they do another one of their live, but yet it's actually taped, but only taped like an hour and a half before it goes live shows, editions of Impact.
A tree falls in the forest, whatever.
Sure, okay. What else? Why not? So that's going on. So, and before we get out of here, I want to bring up something. So I got this tweet.
Cody Rhodes, you left off the big news of the week.
Mm.
Cody Rhodes is going to be guest starring on Arrow this season.
That's right. He is, isn't he?
Yep. Obviously, he will not be in the character of Stardust. But first off, that's a great get. That just excites me as a fanboy. I love Arrow, and I think that's awesome. But secondly, hats off to Cody Rhodes. He has done the whole leave WWE thing in the best possible way. He has gone out there, booked some big dates, got some big matches. He's going to be on a TV show. He is a good self-promoter in the greatest of old school traditions. He's got that Dusty Rhodes nature about him. I love it, and I'm excited to see where his career goes now that he's an independent wrestler. Anyway.
Well, he's going to be in the Battle of Los Angeles coming up here, too.
Mm.
He's on BOA for PWG.
Nice.
Have you heard some of the people that have been announced for BOA this year?
No, I have not.
Oh, geez. This is going to be crazy, dude. Adam Cole, Chris Hero, Cody Rhodes, Dalton Castle, Phoenix, my man Jack Gallagher that stars in the Cruiserweight tournament for WWE, Jeff Cobb from Lucha Underground, John Hennigan, Johnny Mundo, isn't it? Kamitachi, Kyle O'Reilly, Mark Andrews, Mark Haskins, Marty Skrull, Matt Sydal, Matt Riddle, Pete Dunne, Ricochet, Sammy Callahan, Tommy End, and Trevor Lee.
Okay.
That's a pretty good lineup right there.
Okay, you said, yep, okay, cool.
That's a pretty good lineup. So
pretty good lineup. Kyle O'Reilly, Kylo Ren, Kylo.
So we'll see how that goes. That's coming up in September.
Uh-huh.
If you don't have tickets already, you're screwed.
I don't have tickets already.
Well, I'm sorry,
am I screwed?
Man. Yeah, you can't go.
Ticketmaster, right? That's still a thing.
And they don't sell them on Ticketmaster.
What am I looking for? What do I type? Search Ticketmaster. What do I need to type in?
Well, you probably just need to go Pro Wrestling Gorilla, but that show's sold out. I believe it's already been sold out, or tickets have been sold for that.
Okay, let's see here. Gorillas. Okay. not Ticketmaster's not responding. Buckethead, is that it? Is that what I'm looking for?
I'm on their website right now.
Loading results. Wrestling. Okay, here we go. Here we go, Fritzy. Loading the results up. Wrestling with pop culture. Culture Shock. It's a masquerade. Is that what I want to go to?
No.
Atlanta, Georgia on Friday?
No. No.
It's only $10. Let's go.
I'm not going to be able to make it.
Okay. Well, I'll just buy one ticket then.
Fine, then. Get that way. I got to bring up something that somebody brought to my attention over the weekend.
Politics.
No. This is a wrestling thing, okay?
Al-Qaeda. Oh, okay.
So, Scott Hensley, who follows me on Twitter.
Scott Hensley. Okay.
Scott sends me this picture. And it was the inside, like the first page of the book that I wrote that came out 8 years ago called Between the Ropes, Wrestling's Greatest Triumphs and Failures.
Uh-huh.
And there is an inscription with an autograph for me written to Dixie Carter.
Oh, what?
And Scott goes, did you sign this to Dixie? It's at a used bookstore in Nashville. And I responded to him and I said, yes, that's me. There's a story behind it. He said, well, what's the story behind it? So here's the story.
Okay.
Because let me tell you what the inscription is in the book, okay?
I love you forever.
No.
Best of luck. TNA will win everything.
It says, Dixie, thanks for everything and keep up the great work. I'm pulling for you.
Okay.
Here's the backstory of this, okay? So when I did the book, I knew I wasn't going to be able to get any WWE pictures. But I thought I could get some pictures from TNA. So I asked some people there, could I get some pictures to use for the book? And I was told yes. And I told them what I was looking for. They gave me a few examples. And from those, I picked some pictures, including one of Samoa Joe that is on the back. I believe it's on the back. I got the book right here. Yep, Samoa Joe is clotheslining somebody's head off on the back. There's a picture of Christopher Daniels on the spine. And then on the front, Jerry Lynn is giving a pile driver to somebody.
Okay.
Now, mind you, everybody said, oh, you put Jerry on the front there because that's your buddy. Well, the publisher actually chose the picture. And they wanted that picture because the title of the book is Between the Ropes. And guess what? You can see ropes in the picture. But I was given those pictures. Well, when the books came in, and I got X amount for myself to give to whoever, I brought a bunch to a TNA show because I used to go there all the time and go backstage. And I was handing out books to a bunch of the guys. It was like they hit this one day, like, oh, I want a book. And including a couple of people I didn't even know, I pulled me aside. They said, hey, man, I was reading somebody else's copy. Could I get a copy of the book? And
awesome.
I'll give you my address and you can mail it to me.
That's awesome.
But I ran into Dixie, and I actually gave her a copy. And I'd written this for, and like the inscription, I gave her a copy of the book. And I said, hey, I really want to thank you for all your help for this and for allowing me to use, you know, some pictures of the book. And she gave me this look and was like, okay. And we went our separate ways. Come to find out, she had no idea that I ever asked for some pictures to use for the book. And she had not agreed to do it either. But there was no battle over it or anything like that. It was like bygones would be bygones. So she had no idea that I had asked for pictures and I was granted them. And I gave her this copy of the book and she thought so much of it that it ended up at a used bookstore in Nashville.
That is a great story. That was a great story. Wow.
And this guy bought it. I told him, I go, you need to buy that book. And he bought it. I don't know what he paid for it, but good
it
job.
It wasn't enough. He should have paid more for it.
Good job, Scott.
Nice. Well, there you go. It shows you what Dixie Carter thinks of you. She thinks you're all washed up at a used bookstore.
Apparently she did not like the book, apparently.
You know what this story really tells me, though, is that that book came out in what year?
I believe 2008.
Hey, here's the picture. I've been literally scrolling.
By the way, Scott Hensley goes, I bought the book. It was beside the signed Larry Zbyszko book. I wonder if that is a Dixie Carter drop off as well.
That's also next to the ownership papers for TNA. She just dropped those off somewhere because they're not worth much.
Dixie's anymore. Just collecting books and dropping them off at the used bookstore. I could say I could give a really mean joke right now, but I'm going to not do it.
You know what she did though? She kept what was that book? Controversy Creates Cash.
Yeah, they have Bischoff book
up on her shelf still. She references it. She's like, oh, this is a good idea. Yeah, this Eric Bischoff fellow, he really knew what he was talking about.
We should
about.
Bring him in. Oh wait, we already have.
Oh man, this tells me, what year did the book come out?
2008.
Yeah, 2008. So it's been 8 years since your book came out. So it seems to me that it's almost time for a sequel.
That's been talked about.
Even more Between the Ropes, or Betweener the Ropes.
You know what the funny thing is that at the time I did the book with Chris Murray, mm-hmm. who used to be involved with the website. So, and Chris did a lot of work on this book too. When we did the book and we got pitched it, ECW Press actually approached us about, would you guys be interested in doing a book? And we said yes, but they said we want something that's a different idea from other books. They didn't want just a simple history of this or just like a collection of interviews. They want something that's a little bit different. So the way that we did it was, there was a couple of chapters that kind of told the story of the radio show. And then the bulk of the book is talking about basically the previous like 15 years or so leading up to the book. And it was told with like some background and then in the wrestler's words. So we took interviews from over the years of doing the radio show, and we had, you know, so we told like the history of wrestling during that time, but from a wrestler's point of view in their own words from interviews that we had. Mm-hmm. I had no idea that that was actually something that would become a book style now, because we've seen that like Jim Miller has famously done that with Live from New York, which is an uncensored history of Saturday Night Live. He did it with the ESPN book called Those Guys Have All the Fun. So it's kind of like this, I guess, firsthand style, not an autobiography, but history book. Just kind of like it's an oral history. That's right. What it's called. It's an oral history book. And come to find out, we didn't even know what the hell we were doing, but we wrote an oral history book of wrestling during that period.
You set the trend. It seems like they all of these great authors followed in your footsteps.
Yeah, apparently so. So
let's do it again. We'll write a new book and we'll write it in Wingdings, and people will write their books in Wingdings after we get done with ours.
Maybe I'm speaking out of turn here, but I haven't talked to the people at ECW Press in a while, but I know after the book came out and even a couple of years later, I had an open invitation if I wanted to do another book.
All right. Let's take them up on it.
So I don't know how many copies this book sold, and it wasn't like some ridiculous amount, but I believe it did pretty well, especially for the little amount of promotion that was done. And I'm not blaming them at all, because, you know, there's much bigger books that they had to deal with. Now, mind you, ECW Press is now working with WWE. And they're the ones that publish WWE books now.
So what you're saying is WWE would promote our book on the air if we wrote it.
Right, sure.
Okay, let's do it. No, listen, it's 9:36, and I don't have the luxury of going to I'm breaking the fourth wall here. People know that we record this on a Wednesday night. I don't have the luxury of going to the performance center every week and watching all of these great cruiserweight classics and what have you. So can we just wrap this thing up so I can go get off here and go watch WWE Network?
Oh, because they're doing the bracketology show.
Yeah, right. I got to know what's going on. This is like March Madness for wrestling.
I know, man. We got to get to know these guys a little bit better. Uh-huh. Did you watch the clip where they introduced them when they're coming to the ring that they put out on YouTube? It was like a 60-minute clip of Mauro Ranallo and Daniel Bryan giving just the cliff notes about each guy.
I have not watched it yet. I was preparing my notes for this show, so.
Well, that's been out for like over a week, man.
Well, it took a lot of work. We put a lot of work into this show. People don't realize it.
I guess so. So, well, that will do it. On that note, as we always say, we'll wrap it up right there. And by the way, for everybody, this is going to be the new schedule. We're going to be doing the podcast with Michael and I on Wednesdays. And then I think the plan is typically another podcast will probably come out on Thursdays. And not this week, I don't have anybody else, but in the future, they'll typically be me with either another media personality or wrestlers or something. They'll typically be at least two podcasts per week, so be on the lookout on that. That's something I typically try to do anyway. This week, it just didn't work out with my schedule and some other things, but that's typically the way that's going to be, is two podcasts per week. Michael and I's on Wednesday nights.
Don't worry. You're going to get your fix with at the real Wiseman on Twitter, wiseman.ma on Instagram. I will be here for you all.
Mm-hmm.
If you need me, as long as you need me.
Nice plug. So yeah, everybody can find me on Twitter. It's at Brian Fritz. Please subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or on Stitcher. Rate and review the podcast. You can also find it on SoundCloud. Just go to soundcloud.com/betweentheropes. And you can also share it with everybody. Spread the word about the podcast. And when it comes to SoundCloud, you can link it and you can even embed it on other websites, share it on social media, all that fun stuff. So thanks.
And good news. We're moving to Wednesday nights, but next week we're going to have our own mock draft.
I think we're going to do a mock draft in advance of the WWE draft.
Uh-huh. I want to call Heath Slater my first draft pick. Well, wait, I don't want to spoil it. No spoilers. No spoilers.
Okay. Okay. I'll just leave it at that. So. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you soon.
The talking is over.
Thanks for downloading Between the Ropes.
Now, you guys are awesome. Thank you.
For more, go to BetweenTheRopes.com and subscribe to Between the Ropes on iTunes.
Thank you. Have a nice day.